This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
Circulated. I do want to bring your attention to one item on the printed copy that's in your books. It would be line 10. You'll see that the acronym VOA is stricken through, but it wasn't removed. So if we can go ahead and remove that as a friendly amendment. And then on line 20 and 21, where it says National Fire Protection Association, that should actually be OSHA. So if I could accept a friendly amendment with those two corrections to the minutes.
Move to make friendly amendment.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, we are back on then the minutes from the 15th. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as amended?
I make a motion to approve the minutes of April 15th as amended.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then can we get a motion on the minutes for the special meeting on the 29th?
Make a motion to approve the minutes for the special meeting on April 29th.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. First item of business on the agenda, we're going to defer to Kristen Kenyon, the Commissioner's Assistant, to update us on Wyoming's 250th celebration.
Okay, so over the past 3 months, the Wyoming 250th Semi-Quincentennial Committee has met three times. We've been meeting with Sylvia Bruner from the Jim Gatchell Museum, Nancy Tapp from the History Center at the Library, Laurel Foster from the Hoofprints of the Past Museum, and Myra Camino from the Buffalo City Council. So some of the ideas that we've been talking about planning is a dog park called Independence Tales, where you can walk around the park with your dog, and there will be QR codes where you can look up history and like a timeline of our history, and it'll explain like the history of Johnson County, and we're gonna try our best to tie in the independence and the history of the nation, and we're just wanting to commemorate our independence and how our fighting spirit of our nation. We talked about having a permanent memorial in the middle of the park that you would walk around as you're learning the history so that it was always there, and then the importance of always adding future history to the park so that we're having longevity as we go forward. It doesn't just stop here. It continues on with our legacy and our independence and fighting spirit. Another plan that we are thinking of doing is doing a memorial for the KC fight in KC, Wyoming, establishing a turnout off the road and having a memorial for Nate Champion there with some of the information and the history of the Johnson County Cattle War. Some of the other ideas that we're planning for next year would be an old-fashioned 4th of July picnic, parade. We've got an all-school, high-school reunion for Buffalo. We've also discussed having a dress-up your dog contest for kids so they could be involved and they can walk in the parade with their dogs all dressed up with historical figures. And then we also, we are talking to having a car show during that time. And so in order to get this ball rolling, Sylvia Bruner at the Jim Gatchell Museum is writing a grant request for funding for this park and for the KC Fight Memorial. And she is requesting that I'm coming to ask the commissioners to please write a letter of partnership and support for our plans. And then we're also going to reach out to all of various communities, companies, and organizations within Johnson County so everyone is involved and we can get input from everyone. And then we were also wanting to come before the commissioners and ask for funding to help us pull this off. We believe that the grant request is probably going to cover the park that we're trying to establish. Will probably take most of our funding, and so we're asking for $20,000. $5,000 would go towards the dog park expenses, and then $15,000 towards the Nate Champion Memorial, as the grant funding will probably mostly go towards the park, and so we are going to need some more support for the memorial in Casey. And I will open up to any questions. I can answer, do my best to answer. We had a meeting yesterday with Laurel Foster, Sylvia Bruner, and Nancy Tabb, and then Commissioner Kozacek is also on the board, so he can help answer any questions you may have. And Sylvia's here also.
Sure.
I don't have to do much. I'll tell you what, these women are taking the ball and running with it. I just kind of sit there and listen. So, they've been very good. I think we've got some great ideas moving forward. We just want to make sure we have some funding. And a lot of this contingent is on the grant that we do get that Sylvia's writing. So, but I think the plans that we're making, I think, are very good. It's going to be a good time. So. But you know, the grant was kind of a time restraint on us, so that's why we're asking at this time. So,
how's that that turnout gonna? I mean, don't you need to go through some channels to get that put in?
It's being done as we speak, yes, it's. Going through who's she going through down there?
Laurel talked to the State Parks and Cultural
State Parks
Resources Board,
yeah.
And they're willing to help support the Casey Fight Memorial. She's also talking. She's waiting to hear back from the state concerning the highway and the landowner to try to get permission for the turnout there. She did get a quote from this. I can't remember where she got the quote from, but she got a quote for $40,000 with the cost of how much the turnout will cost. We're also going to go before the Buffalo City Council and ask for help there, and we're also hoping to, for the other celebrations, the parade and stuff like that, submit applications for 1% funds. And I did forget to mention that I attached a letter of the participation letter requirements and an example from Sylvia Bruner that she wrote for the Jim Gatchell Museum. And she is asking that we return our letter by June 2nd so she can have everything together for her grant request.
Councilwoman Camino is also on our committee and is kind of liaison from the city, so. But she's not able to attend today. She had a medical situation, I think, for a friend.
So is the city going to assume the responsibility of maintenance and all that on the dog park?
We originally were planning on going to the city to talk to them about that tonight, and Councilwoman Camino being gone, we're going to put it off for another, to the next meeting, just a little bit more detail. She's been working with the city on that side of things. So.
So at this time, it looks like we just need to decide if we'll write a letter of support, and then Commissioner or Kristen, was a letter submitted to make the financial request to put it in this year's budget?
No, we didn't write a letter for this year's budget. This is just a letter we're trying to see if you'd be willing to consider supporting. I could try. I don't know if it's probably too late to write a letter, but I could write a letter if you wanted to.
Well, we haven't had our budget hearings yet, so it's never too late. So.
Okay, well, I will get a letter in as soon as possible.
Sylvia from the museum is here. If you got any questions for her, if you got any comments, Sylvia?
No, not really. I mean, I think that we're going down a pretty good trail here of plans. And I think looking at the grant requirements, that we're tapping into some of the key points that the State Commission is looking for in the applications. They do want to see community events and activities, but they also want to see something in permanence. And I think that's where the idea of the dog park kind of fits that bill, because it provides a permanent sort of commemorative place to talk about the independence and the anniversary, but it also provides a practical use for Johnson County residents and tourists. So I think we're kind of hitting all of those selling points. So I'm pretty optimistic about that part. And I think the grant will cover up to $25,000. So we obviously ask for
park's going to be across from the horseshoe pits on that little green space right there?
Yeah, that's what Councilman Camino has kind of proposed, because that's already being maintained by the city, so it shouldn't add a big increase to cost as far as the maintenance and the work that already occurs there. And a lot of people already use it for walking the dogs and turning them loose. So what she has kind of come up with would be two different sections, one for bigger dog breeds, one for smaller dog breeds, having the double gated entry, that kind of thing for safety, and utilizing that hillside and the ready access to water as well. So trying to keep things as low cost and impact as possible, but also creating a really nice space.
Well, that's a neat idea to add those cue cards throughout, and, or cue coats, and that's kind of a unique feature.
And easy to update.
They tie the two things together to definitely, you know, hopefully spur some interest in people spending some more time in Johnson County, not only in Buffalo, but also in KC to see the historical sites and take part in some of the historical events we have going on here.
I'll make the motion that we go ahead and move forward on getting the letter real quick.
Do you second that?
You do.
I do. I will then.
There's a motion second to write a letter in support of the grant. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Anything else, Kristen?
That's everything, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, next agenda item is the presentation of the Commissioner's Scholarships. Commissioners, you submitted your scored packets to Kristen, and she did a compilation. So if you flip to that tab in your books, looks like the selections for the graduating seniors will do the returning seniors in June once their grades are in. But for Buffalo High School, the selections are Aspen Bowie and Caleb Spangler, with first alternate Connor Rodriguez, second alternate Lily Baker. For KC High School, looks like Catherine Maxwell is the recipient, with Kale Pryor being the first alternate. So with that, Commissioners, you just need a motion to approve those, and we'll present those scholarships at their award ceremonies.
I'd make a motion to award the Commissioner's Scholarship Buffalo to Aspen Bowie, Caleb Spangler, with Connor Rodriguez, and Billy Baker is the alternates. KC High School selection would be Catherine Maxwell, and Kaylee Pryor is the alternate.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. All right. This time we'd like to welcome our friends from Sheridan College up to provide an update on the college in Johnson County. So Mr. Tarter is not going to join. He'll be the moral support in the back. Do you have a handout?
I do. Got some paper for you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Novotny, Commissioners.
For the benefit of our clerk, would you all just please introduce yourselves for the record?
You bet.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Wendy Smith.
Wendy Smith is the vice president of many things and is the lead executive here in Johnson County. I'm Walt Tribley. I'm the president of Sheridan College.
I'm Haley Berry. I'm the vice chair of the Sheridan College Johnson County Advisory Board.
I don't think I have quite enough copies.
And we have Jack Tarter, who's advisory board member as well.
Former chair.
Yeah, he's coming up here. All right.
The floor is yours.
May I begin?
You may.
Chair Novotny, members of the commission, it's a pleasure to be here. I'd like to take this opportunity and perhaps extend it. We're here to answer questions, provide information about the finances, but I'd like you to know from my perspective, certainly our perspective, we look at the financing coming from this commission as an investment in higher education. I don't look at this as paying for the Bomber Mountain rent. I don't. That's too transactional. We were asked by leaders in Johnson County in the early 20-teens, it was before my time, to move out of the basement of the theater and please be an anchor tenant in the Bomber Mountain Civic Center, which we have done. The structure of the financial exchange, I think, has allowed the commissioners to fund higher education, and then we spend that back into the county in the form of rent. But we don't need to do that. I would much prefer to match it dollar for dollar in a commissioner scholarship fund and have it go directly to students. I think that would be a better use of the money. We certainly can afford the rent. It's always been, to me, a symbolic and important input from Johnson County into higher education. That's where I think the money would be best spent, going forward at least. But we do have, I believe, $9,000 on the table. I'd love to see that go to student scholarships. We're about ready to have a Golf for Knowledge coming up here to support students. We'll make our annual donation. That's where we are. But in terms of the actual expenses and revenue, this is our budget. Vice President Smith can go through that with you. We like to focus on what's happening in education here. We have, in my tenure, just recently we have Josh Keegan that came through the nursing program, is now a nursing faculty member. We're training CNAs. That scholarship could go directly to students that want to be certified nursing assistants and serve in the veterans home here. But those students might have complicated lives. There might be young women that have children and they might need childcare. That would be a good use of those dollars, I think, better than going into rent for Bomber Mountain Civic Center. So anyway, we are very proud of our operations here. When it comes to students in high school, the state covers the first 24 credits. There's no tuition charge for the first 24 credits. No tuition, no fees. After 24, it's been a variable mix here in Johnson County as to how much the school district covers, how much it doesn't. Year in and year in, that changes. This type of scholarship could go for every credit beyond 24, cover tuition and fees in that regard. So we don't collect tuition and fees on high school students. We do get state revenue. The state revenue picture is a little complicated. The last thing I want to do is to be complicated in front of you, but our beautiful state does a lot of things very, very well. One of the things they're doing in community college funding, it's a performance-based model. We get paid more for a nursing student's participation than we do for an English student's participation. We get paid more when there's a graduation of a certificate or a degree. So I can't look in the eye and say if we have 150 full-time students, that's times X amount of money, and that equals a total of Y. So it's complicated. We have to go back and look at where were they taking their classes. And the last thing I want to do is be complicated in that regard. But Vice President Smith has laid some things out. If you'd like to go through, at your pleasure, go through the sure. finances here.
You bet. So just to mention what you have in front of you, you have a document with a couple of pictures on the front that is just an overview of who we are and what we do. So I just want to draw your attention to that. We're not, you know, unless you would like to, we're not going to walk through that. You know, we were asked to come and speak about finances, and so the one page sheet that you have in front of you, on the top half, it just shows, you know, where do the dollars come from that support us here. We have, you know, you can see the four primary funding mechanisms, the Bochy's local grant. Now, what that is, you know, you all are paying a half a mil in the form of a Bochy's half mil. And so that's levied by this Johnson County School District number one. You know, just to compare, you know, just to think about the operation in Sheridan and Sheridan College's funding, Sheridan College or Sheridan County residents levy 5.5 mils. And Johnson County has decided to do the half mil of Bochy's, which goes to the school district, and then the school district in their budget supports us and supports our partnership and, honestly, our operation in the center as well, not just what happens in the high schools. So that's that first line. And then we typically have received support for our operations in Johnson County from the city and from you all. And those are the second and third lines there. And then the Sheridan College contribution. And so you can see those numbers. Obviously, the 25, 26, we're in the early stages, just like you, of our budgeting process. So the asterisks are our estimate. This is just an estimate. And then where does that money go? The bottom half of that piece of paper shows generally what our expenses are here. And you can see that people, I mean, no surprise, people are our number one expense. And actually the blue slice of that pie, if you can add the orange slice right next to it, it's over 60%, between our instructors and our folks that are here. That's also a little bit misleading because, our students and our employees here receive support from our business office and our IT folks and, many library, everybody really. It's a team approach for our operation here. It's not just one or one and a half or two or three people. And so I don't know if you have questions about any of that or what questions specifically you were feeling like you needed, an answer to.
So with the revisions in property taxes, will the Bochy's Mill and the 5.5 mills that are levied for the college by the residents of Sheridan County, are those going to be impacted by the legislative action to reduce property taxes?
Chair Novotny, members of the commission, yes, they will be. And we're bracing for the reduction in, potential reduction in the vote of the people in November of 26.
And with that, are you also making contingency plans in the event that the Wyoming legislature through the Appropriations Committee and the biannual budget chooses not to invest in higher education and training our workforce?
Chair Novotny, members of the commission, to the best of our abilities, yes, we are. Further to that, if I may, sir, we have received an executive order canceling a number of federally funded programs. One of those programs is the TRIO program. TRIO doesn't stand for anything, or I would say what it's a student support program. So in the it affects us because two of our main employees here, Joseph Aguirre and Brianna Buckingham, who lives in KC, are funded through that program. But our college is going to sustain those salaries for 3 years. We've made a 3-year commitment to that. TRIO is seen as primarily a student support program that serves most people, like all federal programs, in intercity areas. But that student, that hypothetical student I was referring to, the young woman that has a family that has to quit waitressing to go back to be a CNA, that person would be supported by TRIO. When her grades start falling, she starts slipping, TRIO's right there to call her up and say, hey, come on, let's go, I'm here for you. I'll meet you downtown, let's study together. Anyway, so the reason I'm bringing it up here, Chair Novotny, is that those are also costs that we're bearing. So we are stabilizing the TRIO program for 3 years. Obviously, there needs to be adjustments as, we have a commitment to those students for 3 years. Then the second year, we might make different commitments to fewer students, and then in the third year, so we are going to comply, if you will, but we're carrying that expense as well.
Of our non-traditional students, if we still use the non-traditional term, how many of them are using our programs in Johnson County, whether it's the starting at the GED level to get them through all the way up to the ones that are like Josh, who now have a higher level degree and have been able to advance themselves?
I don't know the answer to that question.
So I can answer it in part. My data in front of me will be a little bit incomplete, but you did mention that, the GED. And so it is important for, to draw attention, I believe, to the fact that the services that we offer in Johnson County span from GED, which we now call the HISET, high school equivalency, just a different certification. Yeah. But we serve those students all the way through support for students who are seeking our 4-year degree. and everything in between. Everything from CDL, the high schoolers, you know, I mean, we serve all of those. Last year we graduated 35 with the GED, of which I believe six were Johnson County students. Please put the asterisk next to that, but I know that there were a significant amount. How many are currently enrolled in that? I don't know. I just met with Billy Ray, and she was really pleased with some of the students that were coming to her over here, but I don't have the number.
Can we get that number?
I can certainly ask. Yeah, and then your question, you know, if we move that forward in the packet that you have some data about unduplicated headcount. How many students are we serving? You know, how many high schoolers are we serving? And then there's a third number in there that I think is also relevant, and that is right now it's 71 residents of Johnson County, so their address in our system is a Johnson County address. They are enrolled in programs, and they're making the transition or doing some of it online through Sheridan College. So it's not programs that are available here. So, you know, I mean, students will come up to Sheridan as well. And the nice thing about our center here and our partnership is that, for example, some of our nursing students in the winter, if the roads are terrible, they come to the center and just zoom into their classes on the main campus. So there's kind of, it runs the gamut, but we're serving hundreds of Johnson County residents. So is that helpful?
It is.
I appreciate that.
Now, you know, Wendy, I've asked you for over a year for these numbers. I haven't seen you for probably 10 months. You haven't been to a meeting. So it's been kind of frustrating to have the communication when you're not at these meetings so we can ask some of these questions.
Commissioner Shelley, my apologies for my absence. You know, the conversation in those meetings is a lot more about the space and management of the building, and I feel like as an anchor tenant, it might at times not be appropriate even for me to be in the room.
That's good to have the room. So we've started having some, and that way we get more feedback so we can see how we can make the building better and a better use of it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, and I can certainly, you know, do everything in my power to be present. You know, also, please remember, if I might, Mr. Chair, you know, the college has done our part to participate in the improvements of the space. And that's not in our lease. That's not, you know, I mean, that's because we're, you know, we want to be good partners. I feel like on the higher education front, we all are pointed the same direction and have the same goal. You guys just approved, you know, scholarships for students. And what's on the table before you is an ask to say, hey, let's you know, strengthen our partnership, commit even more to the student with your 1 cent or 1% dollars.
I think that's where we are. You know, we make our mistakes. We endeavor to be great partners. We endeavor to be good tenants. I don't think any of us are going to be able to sustain Bomber Mountain forever. We're going to have to come up with some solution that is sustainable in the future. But we are committed to Johnson County. And we'll do our part to be the best partners possible. But if we could put our money towards the students, I think that would be a point of pride for everybody, and we would match that. And I think that's a place we can come together if you wish to do the same. So.
How many classes did you offer here this year, and what were they?
Boy, great question. Give me 1 second, if I might.
Fill sometimes. Some of those are in the high school itself.
Right. So I have with me our most recently published schedule, which is for the spring. And so I don't know if it gives you an idea of we do several things. We do concurrent courses, which are in the high school. We do in-person classes in the Bomber Mountain Center, which are primarily at night. Some, you know, we do have some noon hour classes, and students can pursue a number of degrees that we commit to. You can achieve a business degree, a general studies degree, or a health science degree from Johnson County without leaving here. But it's a combination of online and in-person at night. And then we've added our what we call community interest courses as well, which are 8-week shorter courses.
And I think that's great for a retirement area that we are. They get to come. I mean, I tried to get into the drone class, but it was already full. So I think you have some good programs that give, you know, the whole community something to do, and I think that's a nice asset. Mm-hmm. But it's just the communications is what I was having frustrations with.
Fair enough.
And remember that we also meet as a board monthly during the school year. So, and we've had a lot of commission absence. Typically, we have a face from the commission and from city council, which we've not had at our meetings in quite some time.
When are these meetings?
They are the third Wednesday of every month.
And they are?
At Bonner Mountain at noon.
Kristen does put them on the commissioner's calendar. So. And yes, I was over the phone for the legislative session.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You'll now that we're done, see my smiling face.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Tarter, any thoughts? I see the wheels are turning.
No, I'm just trying to be a little wallflower, you know. Mr. Chairman.
I'm getting started, Mr. Chairman.
I don't think you're a violet by any means, so.
Pardon?
I don't think you're a shrinking violet by any means.
No.
But how many years have you been involved with Sheridan College in Johnson County?
Probably 30, 35.
And in your...
When I first started, Mr. Chairman, we were meeting in a room in the back of the, actually where Wild Downs is now.
Out at the old crossroads.
Yeah.
So in your opinion, are we on the right trajectory for education, whatever level it is, whether it's the GED equivalent or...
I think we are. You know, I talked about the scholarship, and I one of the things that I harp on all the time is the concurrent enrollment and dual credit courses. You know, you hear the parents in the community whine and cry that their kid didn't get a scholarship. Well, if the parents would open their eyes, their kids would open their eyes, they could almost have 2 years of college out of the way when they're seniors in high school if they participate in those two programs. I think we've had, what, two or three kids that have done that. And, you know, 2 years of college, figure out what that's worth. And that can be done through this program, through that Sheridan College in Johnson County puts on. And, you know, I've talked to parent after parent, and, you know, I think a lot of them are waking up to it, but Sheridan College has offered every kid in the community, basically, an opportunity to graduate from high school with 2 years of college. And the thing is, they can have the 2 years of college, a certificate, before they even get their high school diploma, because they have the graduation earlier. Right?
Yeah.
There's a huge, both the girls graduated, I think, with 32 credits.
Yeah.
I mean, it does serve its purpose.
What's that going to cost you when you go to Harvard?
Well, I don't think they were going there, so.
Oh, well, how about Yale then? Chairman, so. No, I really believe that one of the greatest things we have in this community is Sheridan College. Truthfully. And we don't have the tax burden on it that like Sheridan has it. They have a 5.5% now, we have a 0.5%, right? So we got a good deal.
Any additional questions for the distinguished folks from Sheridan College?
Very enlightening, thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, thank you.
Item on the agenda is a consent request dealing with the pump station at Healy Reservoir. I'd like to welcome Carrie Money up, who is representing the landowner, and will walk the commission through the request. So good morning.
How are you? So this is a formality that the state engineer's Board of Control office requires under their regulations. And the reason I need your consent is because I also manage Healy Reservoir. And the Hillier-Onslow Ditch that irrigates a good share of the Merlin Ranch, which is Mark Gordon's ranch, comes off. The head gate is on the dam on Clear Creek. Healy's on one side, the Clear Creek Dam is on the other side. The way that dam works is I have to fill that dam to fill Healy, because there's a 66-inch concrete conduit that goes through that dam. It's hollow, goes across the road and fills Healy. It's all gravity feed. That's why you see that big hood sitting over the out over the front of us to catch the debris and kick it over the dam. Then the idea behind that was to pump it through that 66-inch pipeline up to Lake DeSmet and feed the power plant that was never built. Those water rights were transferred up there from Clear Creek. You own those water rights. It's the third enlargement of Lake DeSmet. Since you share that diversion point and that head gate for the Hillier-Onslow is also on that dam, they consider that to be an intervening source. And so you have to consent that you'll allow them to move their water right. He's putting a pivot, and it's being constructed right now below his ranch there. It's a large pivot. It's five stations. But they're going to move that water that they're taking through that head gate, and they're going to put it in a pump station down there and pump out of the creek and to feed that pivot. So we have to go through this process to move the water. It will not injure your water rights in any way. It won't injure anybody's. It's actually more efficient for the creek and for irrigation and crops and everything else, most economical and beneficial way to get water. So when I release water to them, they won't take it through the head gate anymore, which was silted in and has to go through a siphon under the creek, and it's a real pain to get it all the way down there. And it's at the end of the ditch where they're putting the pivot. This way, the water will go down the creek clean. They won't have that sand problem and all that loss. And they can pull it right out of the creek, and it's going to take a huge amount less water. You know, that thing only is going to pump like 500 gallons a minute. So it's going to be more beneficial for everybody, because the water they don't use that they call for is going to go down the creek to help other people. I have a map here to show you. I can walk around and show you real quick what it looks like if you care to see it. But it's a formality. And I had to get consents from the state of Wyoming, because they have state lands down there that border the irrigation lands. YDOT, because they have a road that goes through those 40s that have irrigation lands, and all the people all the way down to the old Borgelli place. Everybody had to give consents. You're the last one. So this is, and what happens if, this goes a little further, what happens if somebody doesn't give a consent, then you have to have a hearing and advertise it in the paper, and you have to get a magistrate and all this. And so by getting the consents, it's like I say, it's not going to change anything. It's actually going to make it better. Does that confuse the heck out of you, or you have any questions? Or
no, it's a very efficient way to irrigate. So.
Yeah, and right now you know that the big pumps in Healy aren't operating anyway, and there's a agreement with the state to fill those water rights out of Piney. It would be extremely expensive to fire those pumps up and never pump that water back up to the lake. I ran those pumps, each one of them for 15 minutes about 12 years ago, was the last time. And so that was an hour and a half worth of 1,500 horsepower. Each one of them's 1,500 horsepower. And I ran each one for 15 minutes, so that was an hour and a half, cost $8,200. And that was before the power went up, the cost of power. So it's not real beneficial to run those pumps anyway, And so it's not like you've got an operating water right down there right now anyhow. So just thought I'd throw that in because I didn't know if you guys knew that or not.
Commissioners, questions for Mr. Ryan before we go to Mr. Mavrakis? Quick question is,
would you like to see the map, or do you care like about seeing it? Or
I'd like just take a glance at it.
Sure.
Let me try to understand.
You care if I...
Please, Mr. Mavrakis, this went before the Lake Dismit Advisory Board, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And what was the opinion of the Lake Dismit Advisory Board?
There were no concerns at the advisory board.
Okay. Here's the dam. Here's the ditch. Comes around. This is the dam there. These are the existing water rights. They make you show the existing, and then they make you show the water.
So that pump's going to go kind of where that bridge usually
right
is.
Here. It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I'm choked. Yeah. Krishaw, did you get a chance to hear?
No, I did not.
Here's the TV.
The Lake Dismit Advisory Board, Mr. Money came and talked to us about this too, and there were no concerns from that advisory board.
They ran a hard time getting it cleared down. It was, it's so sandy.
So this is just a change in the point of
the point of diversion, right? And they'll pull it out of the creek right here.
Right.
Yeah, it's a big, they've already constructed most of it down there. It's a big tip.
So I have a consent form here that I'd like to get you guys to sign and take with me so that I need to put this in the mail today because they're going to consider it at the state board meeting on Monday.
Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the petition, consent petition for the, what am I trying to say here, for the Clear Creek diversion there.
Okay. There's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Carrie, I'll go ahead and sign this right now, and we'll get Kristen to notarize it so that you don't have to sit and wait on us.
Well, I can notarize it, too.
Well, then, all right.
Would that be okay?
That would be fine.
And we'll just skip a step.
Copy of that when you get it all notarized for our file.
I will.
All right.
Send it to you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. All right, staying in the vein of water, we do have an amendment before us to the grant with the Wyoming Game and Fish. This is for the North Access. And Paul, any key points other than the change in date?
No, Mr. Commissioner. The Game and Fish's fiscal deadlines are a little tighter than the county's, and so they thought it was best to push that grant deadline to the end of the calendar year to give the county a little bit more time to meet all the stipulations of that grant. But I think we're well on the way to meeting all the stipulations of the grant, and so a good business practice to sign that, and then we'll get that money towards the end of the year.
I believe Mr. Craig had an opportunity to review this, and Commissioners, this is no change. This is the $175,000 that Game and Fish is putting towards that North Access, and it just amends the date a little further out so that it lines up.
Make the motion that we approve this and move for the movement of the date.
Second.
There's a motion and second to approve the amendment to the grant. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. How does it look so far on the filling?
We've only been able to put about a foot into the lake. We've hardly had over 100 CFS coming down Piney Creek. It was very white right now between Sheridan and Buffalo, so I think we're going to get better water. Talked to Ryan Barker. He said the snowpack up above is better than it thought. So initially some of those percentages were in the low 60s, and now they're even better than that. So I think we're in pretty good shape. We're putting about 100 CFS in the lake right now. The tunnel's open 4 feet, so as soon as we get more water will be coming in. But the elevation of the reservoir is about 4608, 4609. We'd like to get it up to about 12 or 13 on our way.
Well, with 85 degrees on Sunday, it ought to help.
We need those warm temperatures at night up high to get it going. It'll happen.
All right. Any further questions for the Lake Smith Operating Department? Mr. Crego, do you need to do a tap out with Mr. Ruby?
Not unless he does.
Okay.
All right. Just watch him work. It'll be great.
All
right. So I've done well with this chair down. That's far.
It's been nice to see you work.
Me too.
You had to nod twice.
Good for all of us.
Next item on the agenda is a request for emergency management preparedness training, and this is the courthouse closure request, so we're going to defer to Kristen, who is going to bench for Jimmy today.
Yeah, so the Jimmy Cataline, the emergency management coordinator, is in a training today, so he could not be at the meeting. So I asked him to submit a letter requesting closure for emergency management preparedness training for the county employees. And I guess it'd be easier to just read a part of his letter to explain. So it says, Johnson County Emergency Management is working to prepare all county and employees for first full-scale exercise to train, manage, and develop response techniques for all personnel in the event of significant hazard affecting county facilities operations. The tentative plan is to conduct these full scales over the summer at each county building, respectively, with the employees who operate out of each of these buildings. In preparation for these exercises, emergency management has met with some department heads to ensure applicability and pertinence to their departments, starting with the old courthouse due to the high frequency of public traffic. In an effort to prepare personnel and help them understand what we as a county expect of them should an event arise, a PowerPoint has been created to outline these expectations, but also raise awareness of key issues surrounding the myriad of threats likely to impact county facilities, to include active shooter, mass casualty incidents, white powder, bomb threats, medical issues, and so forth. This will provide a baseline of expectations, response techniques, and safety guidelines for employees to follow. And in order to accomplish this training before exercising and to help complete this as efficiently as possible, the old courthouse department heads and emergency management have agreed that hosting this training on Thursday, May 15, 2025 at 4 p.m. would be the best solution. As a result, emergency management is requesting the county commissioners allow an early closure to occur on this day to allow for this training to occur and avoid extra hours on employees and provide notice to the public regarding this early closure. And I have also included commissioners a copy of the PowerPoint for your review.
Commissioners, before you is a request to close this building at 4 o'clock on Thursday, May 15th for an emergency management training for the employees in this building.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to approve closure of the old courthouse on Thursday, May 15th at 4 o'clock for a training. Any discussion?
Are they going to advertise website? How are they going to get the word out real quick?
So we'll have to use all of the available items. We'll be posting on the doors. We'll get advertised in the paper. It'll be on the webpage everywhere to meet the legal requirements that we're going to deviate from our 8 to 5 public open of this building.
Commissioner Shelley, Treasurer Bishop also has a Facebook page for the Treasurer's Office, so I was going to ask her to post that, and then I can share it. I don't have a clerk's, but that'll probably be what gets out the most through that social media.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the closure, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We are at that time of year that it is the city-county cleanup. Working with the Solid Waste District, the dates proposed are Wednesday, May 14th through Saturday, May 17th. Vouchers will be available May 12th through the 16th. For county residents, they go to the treasurer's counter. For city residents, they go to City Hall. Must have that voucher to dump free of charge at the landfill. There are some limitations on what we do accept with that voucher. And this isn't to be confused with hazardous material collection day that the Conservation District that's done later in the year where paints and tires and other things are taken. This is just typical things that can go into the landfill. So commissioners, we just need to approve this because there is an appropriation involved that we pay the Solid Waste District for the amount of tonnage that comes across the scale that's attached to those vouchers. So is there a motion to approve city county cleanup from the Wednesday, May 14th through Saturday, May 17th?
I make the motion to approve.
Second.
There is a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Jim Gatcher Museum was next. I don't see their representative, so we'll just roll further down our agenda and hopefully we'll see the fire warden, and we may actually call him and let him know we're ahead of schedule if you want.
We'll contact both parties and ask them to come.
All right. Commissioners, the next item on the agenda was, this is a request that came from Congresswoman Hageman. They are in the process of budget reconciliation. She has requested that counties send a letter of support for sections 80301 and 80302 of the House Natural Resource Committee's reconciliation bill. This pertains to the Buffalo Resource Management Plan and the Rock Springs Resource Management Plan. There is a copy of the draft letter in your packet. Mr. Craig will have a couple of grammatical edits that I have here. If you have questions on changes to that letter, we are on a tight deadline. This request came in Friday at 5:21 p.m., and then we have to have this turned around by noon today. So I went ahead and drafted this letter over the weekend and yesterday. So any questions on budget reconciliation or the contents of the letter?
Mr. Chairman, I had an opportunity to review the letter and the material that's sent out. I'd make a motion to approve the letter that's been written, send it to Congressman Hageman.
Second that. There is a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Brucey, we are a little ahead of schedule, so do you need Cynthia, Sylvia to join you, or
no,
do you want to?
I don't need Sylvia, but I need David.
Oh, David Eads. Okay.
David Eads, yeah. Unless, I don't know,
okay. And we've got a few other things that we can go ahead and transact. Commissioners, before you also were vouchers. Looks like vouchers were submitted in the total amount of $165,227.97. Were there any vouchers that any commissioners wanted to hold for further discussion?
No.
Commissioners, what's your pleasure?
Make a motion that we approve the vouchers.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those those in favor of approving the vouchers, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We are back in regular session. I would like to welcome up Johnson County Fire Warden, Tom Camino, to update us on the coal seam fire mitigation efforts that are ongoing.
So, to begin with, last week we met in Gillette with Sheridan County, Campbell County, Johnson County reps, fire wardens, EMS, or emergency management, and a gentleman from Broadus, Montana came down, and he's emergency management coordinator slash fire warden up there, but he's taken lead in the three counties around that area, and they've put in for certain grants to mitigate their coal seam fires. So the first thing they did is they got a grant to get an IR flight, infrared, to locate and map all the coal seam fires that they have. In the three counties alone, they have 1,000 coal seam fires, which is an ongoing thing in August where they start fire. So he presented that to us and kind of led us into where we needed to go from there to put in for a grant. We got the FMAG grant, right? So the emergency management coordinator from Sheridan was there, and he basically took the lead on it, and he was going to apply for this grant. It's going to be $500,000 in that area for the first time, and what all they're going to do is hire a company to fly it and map it, and then they'll go from there. So visiting with the two fire chiefs at Powder River Fire District and Johnson County Fire District, they do not believe it's the district's problem from now on. It is the landowner's problem. So they want a step clean of it. So basically, it's all on most. Johnson County has a very small fingerprint in the sand on this. Campbell County is the one that has the largest. They don't know how many. They think they found 20 since the fires they've had. We've found one. But so they're going. The emergency management Sheridan is going to put in for the grant, see what we can come up with, and then go from there. That's about all on that I have right now. It's just going to see if we can get the grant money for that and then proceed. The gentleman from Broadus, they've gone further than that, and they went and applied for an EPA grant for $10 million. And they got it, and they're mitigating these coal seams. So they've hired a coordinator to go ahead, do all that, and manage it. And then they're finding most cost-effective is build fire lines around all these coal seams. But there's some of them are totally inaccessible. You know, that's so that's where we're at with that. The BLM was there. We visited with them because a lot of the coal seams we have in this county are on BLM in that Deer Creek fortification area. They're all on board. They're going to do what they can with this. And because every time we have a fire, it seems like it goes to private, and then we have to go to the fire suppression account. And we all know where the fire suppression account is. So that's where we stand with that. If they do get awarded this grant, the only problem is it's 25% match. And some of that, and it can be in kind or cash, one or the other. So that's where we're standing right now. And I haven't heard any more on where they've gone with this, the rest of it. But I just wanted to fill you in on that, on what's happening there. So you guys got any questions? And I'm sure you do.
In terms of our one new coal seam fire that has been detected since the House Draw fire, Mr. Pena, what are your thoughts on mitigation efforts around it, whether it's to treat the...
That's a YDOT problem. It's in the right-of-way. And we've notified them, and they put barrels around it, and that's all I've done. So, I know the engineers were worried about it burning underneath the interstate, so I think we, but, so, and all the other coals, and the house draw, I don't know if there's that many. If they are, they're all going to be north of the interstate, if that many, so. And most of them could be mitigated by the landowners, by fire lines or sterilizing the ground around them. But first of all, they've got to be located and mapped so they'll know, be aware of. And some of the landowners may not want to do anything. Who knows? I know down when we had the Cato fire, it started one coal seam fire on the Watt Ranch, but it's right in the middle of state property. And it's just sitting up on a big hill burning away. And it hasn't caused any problems yet, but and who knows if it will. And there's absolutely nothing. We went and looked at it, and there's nothing we can do with it. Can't even get to it. Horseback. So, and a lot of the areas where the coal seams are, they're totally inaccessible. So, but that's where we stand.
So the districts, they're going to wipe their hands, so that matching or that 25% will come out of the county and they're still going to mess with it.
Well, Campbell County's already, their commissioners already have agreed to it. Sheridan County, I haven't heard back from what they've done yet, and that's the reason I'm here reporting to you people. It could also be in kind, so if like road and bridge could get involved or the emergency management, I mean, all time can go towards that grant money. So,
the data that they're collecting in Montana, is their intention then to like input it into their county GIS system?
I think it's not. I don't know if it's in their county GIS system, but I'm not sure. I didn't ask. But the way I understand it, we just map it and then locate it, you know, drop pins where they are, and then from then they could contact the landowners and tell them what they have, or BLM. So at this time right now, I think in the county, BLM, I think they have like 7 or 8 recorded in the county, BLM. And for all I know, on private land, we don't have any that we know of yet, but, so.
So, that guy needs that basis to start.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds like the way to get that basis.
Yeah, so basically we gotta get, the money's already sitting in Cheyenne, it's just to get it approved for coal seam mitigation and then go from there.
So we'll be responsible for 1/3 of the 25%?
Mm-hmm. Which would be around $30,000 to $40,000 or in kind. That's what they were, you know, discussing down in Gillette that day.
Thing we need to move forward, stay with this.
We've already had 3 suppression fires down in that Deer Creek area, so I'm thinking it's a good thing that we start doing something. I just don't know how big a fingerprint that Johnson County is going to have compared to Sheridan and Johnson counties. I'd hate to see us take on 25% of the you know, we only get a little portion back out of it, but that could be negotiated too.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, $30,000 is really not a lot of money when you have a fire.
I can say that. Spend that pretty quick, like a fire.
Yeah. 4 days, we spent $6.2 million on the house draw fire. Yeah. We did pretty good.
Would there be the opportunity to refine the area that they're going to fly? Obviously, we know from the geology of the county where the coal is, and we also know that the closer you get to the bighorns, the further it drops because of the amount of overburden, which then makes a potential for a coal seam fire potentially less because of the interaction with the surface. So, I don't. There's no need to fly the whole county.
I was just thinking, and this is my thought. I-90 to the Campbell County line, Campbell County line to Arvada up Highway 16, and then to I-90 because of the coal seam we have on the Watt Ranch.
Yep.
And but probably, because then you'd, the only other way we could do it would be do the, was it Tipperary or Red Hills Road? And we had one bid on the IR flight. It's 15 cents an acre. Yeah. And this flight, the BLM has used it, and they can do it in the summer, and they can detect sage grouse with it. So it's pretty efficient. Now, the boys in Montana have said their best luck was with drones. And we visited with the BLM on drone it, and they said that just it'd take forever with a drone to do the acreage that they're talking about.
Something to consider budget time.
Well, or I could suggest that you write a letter to the district to see if they want to do it, but I know they're struggling too, so I know Colby and Mark, they just want to, because they're all volunteer and they just don't want any more on their plate, so, for mitigation and that other, so. And as far as the rehab on the house draw fire, that's all up to the landowners now. We don't have anything to do with the rehab on that. So. But that's where we're at on the coal seams.
Questions for the fire warden?
I don't think so.
Great news, huh?
I wish I could come up with some good ones for you, but I just can't.
Well, if you guys got any questions, just give me a call anytime. You guys all have my number, so.
There's little ones around. I mean, right next to my house we have one.
Oh, really?
On that side of that hill.
Mm-hmm. And how long has it been there? Who knows?
But it just showed up about 4 years ago when we first.
Yeah, but first from started. Where?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the emergency manager out of Montana, he said, this is not going to be a problem for the next 1 or 2 years. He says that you're going to see a whole lot of fire problem from like the Remington fire and Elk fire and all that about 3 years down the line, when all that vegetation grows up around it. And. And that's when they'll probably see more and more coal seam fires. Or once they burn, fall in, and then they come out. So that's what I know. Okay. If you guys got anything for me, just give me a call anytime. So
thanks
for your time.
Representative of the museum and our county facilities department to talk about a request from Jim Gatcher Museum.
Thank you. As we all know, the museum is like everybody is trying to save money, and one of the things we could do to, in a way, save money is to use solar power for our electric. And we have a sponsor who was willing to finance this endeavor within reason. We do not know, of course, at this point what, if any effect tariffs might have on cost of solar. And that's I had to start with you folks, because there's no point in getting a proposal if you say no, and it's just an inconvenience to somebody who might. We don't want any inconvenience. Over the past 5 years, plus a couple of months of 2025, the electrical bills for the museum were $15,000 and $28. And now that all of that would not be saved because the Rocky Mountain has a minimum which would be paid regardless. It would just cover the actual use, electrical use costs. I'm kind of ramrodding this project, and I'm going to apply for a Blue Sky grant. Don't know, of course, whether we'd be getting that, and that also might affect whether, you know, the cost of what the donor is willing to contribute to the project. But there would be no cost to the county, no cost to the museum. It'd either go or no go. Oh, questions?
Bruce, can you walk us through where the solar panels would be and how that would comply with the historic designation on this building as well as the Carnegie Library?
They would be on the flat roof of the museum building, the brick building, on the flat roof. They would not be particularly visible from the, you could see them if you were looking for them, but they wouldn't be in your face, you know, sticking out. There's already, what up there?
There's AC units up there.
And I don't think anybody has ever particularly noticed them. So then.
What you're not proposing is you're going to throw a solar panel out on the front lawn.
No, absolutely not. Not
statue.
No. And they wouldn't be on the roof of the library or anything like that. No, they would be as inconspicuous as possible on that flat roof. And as I say, you could see them from here, from the courthouse probably, you know, I'm sure you'd be able to see them, but I don't think that the average person driving, walking, or anything by would even notice them. Because from the street side, the view is blocked by the Carnegie Building. And if you go down the little street, I don't know where I am anyway. If you go down the street, but it's between the courthouse and the school, you know, you'd have to be looking for them. And then the carriage house would block them from the other view. So, I mean, they'd be practically invisible.
How big a footprint are they going to take on that roof?
That I can't tell you because we haven't had the, you know, I did have someone come and look, you know, I gave him the information about what we, what our costs are, you know, how much is used every year. And he said that he thought he could cover the, what he could install would cover, but I don't know the exact footprint. He thought he could provide enough power to cover the museum's usage. But I'm sorry, I can't tell you the footprint. And it might, you know, he's going to have to work around, if there are AC units up there, he's going to have to work around those.
And so, I mean, we're going to be going into that road so we could, you know, possibly get lakes through coming into the new.
I think that they are used to dealing with that kind of thing pretty intensively. They have to deal with roofs all the time. And they know hopefully the company will be a good one and know what they're doing. I'm not going to take, you know, we're not going to be taking the cheapest bid just because there's some fly-by-night unit. It's going to be an established company that would be doing the work.
I think it's probably a good thing. Like she says, these decent companies, respectable companies, deal with flat roofs. That's got a rubberized roof on that portion of the building. I'm not sure they even penetrate them anymore. They probably just glue to them, so they don't have the probability of leaks. I don't know that for a fact. I also know, because of this weekend, we had extensive discussion on solar systems, and any solar system going in, especially a building like that, has to go through state plan review as far as its equipment, how they're going to tie it in, and what it's going to do to the building. The museum has two services on it. One is on the very corner of the Carnegie Building. The other is back here by the entrance into the basement of the Yeah. The back building over here where our boiler's at. I don't know where they would want to tie in. I think it would be a good thing. I looked at it with Brucey, and I think that is pretty much unobstructed. You won't see a lot of it from the street. And it would be shielded from most of our wind. That's a big issue that we've had lately, is winds. Mm. And I think it would be shielded from the wind because they're just big flat panels.
They'll be laying flat.
What's that?
They're laying flat on there too.
No, they'll be
raised up at an angle to the best angle to catch the sun when it's July and when it's January.
So you go through this process, the guy covers it, pays for it. We get a big hailstorm come in, knocks them out.
I have solar panels on my house, and when we were we had some hailstorm, and I called my insurance company and said, are my solar panels covered by insurance in this event? And he said yes. So, I mean, that would be something between the museum and the insurance company, I think, to determine. And actually, the cost of the panels is not, at least in my case, was not the biggest expense. The biggest expense was getting the electrical work done. That was bigger than the actual physical cost of the panel. And if there's a hailstorm, it would be the panels that took the beating. The electrical would be probably not affected.
You can do, David, or is that something you're going to have?
The company that installs them, I believe, does that work.
Yeah, that'd be the ones. As far as replacing a panel, we might be able to do that, because they're just unbolt on and plugs. As the cost, like she says, the cost of the solar panels isn't that great anymore, unless the tariffs take a big hit on them.
As I said, I had to start with you guys because there wasn't any point in pursuing grant estimations and all that stuff if you guys say no, you know. So my son is involved with the airport. He was on the airport board in Laramie, and they obtained a Blue Sky grant. Apparently, they're interested in community projects.
We don't need a formal action on this unless there is opposition to the museum pursuing this, and certainly they'll come back once they have a
yes, absolutely.
Design and plan. So any opposition to them?
I've been involved in it since they started talking about it, so I've had the opportunity to ask my questions. Spoke with Dave a little bit about it also, so yeah,
well, I'm good.
I'm talking about it.
So I can pursue the okie doke. Sounds good.
It's my only question. Would there be any value of the county adding some panels to our flat roof that is
probably
annexed addition here?
Probably.
My concern with this flat roof is the load that we would add to the 1884 roof.
Oh, yeah, there is that.
What about if they were just on the addition?
That's a possibility. We've got two rooftop units up there, though. So.
Okay. Just thought I'd throw that out.
I'm actually looking at maybe the judicial center and maybe the jail for some solar.
Oh, if we could piggyback or, you know, maybe something on that. That would be advantageous for all of us.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks.
Thank you. It was on the first draft but then fell off. We do have two catering permits. The first is for Extreme Bowls at the Johnson County Fairgrounds. This is the 17th of this month. This is just malt beverage, so there's just one catering permit. So, and I'll pass it around if you need to look at it, since it wasn't in your packet.
I do believe this is the third year in a row the scale has sought this permit, and they've been, all fees have been paid.
Commissioner, what's your pleasure on the catering permit for Extreme Bowls, Johnson County Fairgrounds, the 17th of May?
To make a motion, we approve the catering permit for the 17th of May for Extreme Bowls.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Chris and I text both of them to see if they can get on early, and I haven't had a response, but if you check and see if possibly they're on.
Leave you in the capable hands of one Barry Crago. I'll see you later.
No one else is on.
Okay. Well, we are scheduled with them at 10:45. At this time, it would open. Is there any public comment? Okay, if there is no public comment, just a reminder that the Board of Health meets at 1 and the Justice Center Joint Powers Board meets at 1:30. So we'll stand at ease subject to the recall of the chair at 10:45 when we hear an update from our benefit company on our insurance renewal.
Okay, I think I've got Diana on, and can you guys hear us?
We can.
Great. Diana, you there?
I am.
Wonderful. Well, are you going to, if I just go ahead and dive in here?
Please.
Appreciate your patience on this one. I'm on the road. I'm actually between the Omaha and Lincoln right now in Nebraska, but we wanted to have this meeting just because of this, for disclosure purposes. Timing on those types of things is always of the essence, just ensuring that we don't have a potential large claimant that pops up, that wasn't on the radar before for the carrier. And we negotiated this. I will tell you, we went out to 30 different markets. We evaluated 30 different markets, I should say. Of those 30 markets, we actually shopped it to, I think it was about 18 of those markets. And then of those markets, I spreadsheeted just the top quote options with the incumbent. The incumbent actually came in most competitively again this year, which is never a bad thing to happen. It wasn't like that originally. If you can see, do you guys have hard copies with you?
We do.
Okay, if you refer to the initial renewal on the left-hand column, you've got the current on the furthest left-hand column, and then the initial renewal. You can see that Companion with Blue Cross came in initially at a 4% on the increase for the fixed costs. And I'm looking at row A. If you follow that row A across, that's 4%. On the maximum cost, they came in at a 3.5%. However, there was some additional laser risk that bumped that number up to a 5.4%. Now, in the interest of time for today, we just really wanted to talk through things briefly from a high level. See if you guys, if you commissioners had any questions, and then lock down stop loss, and then follow it up with a subsequent in-person visit. So I'm just going to high level things today. What we really focused in on is option 4, and I'll explain why in just a minute. But if 4, that's the column highlighted in yellow at the very top. If you follow row A across, the fixed costs are coming in. We were able to negotiate that all the way down to a negative 0.3%. We were also able to negotiate them down overall total maximum cost with net laser risk. We were able to negotiate them all the way down to a negative 2.5% from what was originally at 5.4%. Now, you might notice, if I could draw your attention towards the top of that same column, you'll see where it says contract type specific. And it says that on the left-hand side, contract type specific. You can follow that across. Without going into too much granular detail on this, you'll see it says 15, 12, 18. Does everybody see that?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. So you're currently on a 24-12 contract or 24-12 agreement there. That contract, we've always felt that I'll just say we've never been really big fans of that contract. The reason why is that on occasion you can have a large claimant pop up at the last minute, and that will run into the following year. It will run into the new year. And if that happens and the carrier sees that, say, in May or in April, we had a really huge claimant pop up, and it was a really high dollar amount, those carriers are going to underwrite that accordingly because they're going to see that they're going to absorb all the risk because it means all of those claims flow into the new contract year. We don't like that kind of a policy. That's what inherently you guys were set up with. We've been looking for a number of years to be able to flip that to what we call a run-out policy, which is a 12-18 policy. And the benefit to the 12-18 policy is if you have a big claim at the end of the year, at the end of your plan year that pops up, let's say April or May or even June, you have a full additional 6 months to get that claim paid. It's a much better contract. We feel like it's a safer contract. And it allows the carrier's markets to get more competitive on your rates. So we're big believers in that. What they were able to do this year, what Companion is offering up, is they're saying, hey, we will allow a three-month run-in as well. So if anything pops here right at the end of the year, we'll allow that to get paid and taken care of. So it's a 15, 12, 18, and then it will convert next year, the subsequent year, to a 12, 18 policy. So we believe that's a much stronger, more robust program to move that direction. That would certainly be our recommendation. You don't have to do that. If you just left your policy alone and didn't change it at all, that would be option one. And you can look over at option one. That's actually a negative 4.7%. But Diana and I just felt like given the year and how well the renewal has run, and since it's coming in at a decrease and we have a carrier that's willing to offer this transitional contract, why not do it? It would be a good move to do it. It would solidify your position with a stronger contract moving forward, and you still come in at a slight decrease. I'm gonna pause there for just 1 minute and see, do any of you have any questions so far?
No questions at this point.
Okay. Everything else on the plan remains exactly the same. There would be no changes. It stays with Blue Cross. It stays with your current carrier. Once again, all we're doing is flipping that 24-12 over to a 12-18. So that, at this point in time, would be our recommendation. Like I said, we did get other markets who came in and quoted, but Companion was the strongest again this year, which is great. It's nice to build additional credibility with a certain carrier that always bodes well and helps other markets come in more competitively in subsequent years. So for the purposes of the visit of our discussion today, that would be all we would need from you would be approval to sign off on the companion quote, whether you want to go with option one or option four. And we can take it from there and lock down the underwriting and then come on up and have a, you know, more formal in-person meeting with you here in a few weeks.
I do have one question. I might have missed it, sorry. You know, it says the 1218, and what's the 1212 right below it?
1212 is your aggregate contract. We would also, and thank you for bringing that up, Commissioner, we would love long-term, it's something we talk about each year, we'd love to move you to a 2412 contract. And essentially what that means is anything incurred during the new contract year, but also backing into the prior contract year for an additional 12 months, for a total of 24 months, is included in the policy. And so it's nice to have that contract be a 2412. It's certainly an option for you to bite off on this year if you were to so choose. We can take the move on the specific this year since that's harder to do. We could stutter step it if you wanted to do the specific this year, the 15-12-18, and then do the 24-12 next year. That's certainly an option. That's always up to you guys in terms of what you want to do there.
Okay, thank you.
Beth. In fact, Commissioner, you can see on option 5, just to clarify that a little bit more,
yep.
Option 5 is that option. If you were to make both of those changes this year, that's what that would look like.
Yeah, but the 7.3% is the biggest number I see on a change there.
It is. That's why we would feel very comfortable with you moving forward with option 4. It creates it mitigates your risk the most, if that makes sense, for the least amount of cost. And like I said, we've been trying to do this for years, and we were just able to get Companion to bite off and agree to that. We feel like it was a huge coup to get them to roll forward on this at a negative 2.5%. As far as premiums go, our recommendation would be to hold things flat. We're never fans of really riding the market, so if there's a decrease, you pull in and switch everything over to a decrease this year, and then next year maybe you have to bump it up a little bit more, just depending on what that looks like. Our thoughts and our feelings are on that. When you come in with a slight decrease, it's probably best to just hold everything at current, if that makes sense. But it's nice in the world of insurance, obviously, that don't overstate this, but it's nice to be able to come in with either a flat or a decrease when the national averages right now are closer to that 8 or 9% overall.
You know, the 2.5% reduction is a welcome treat as we go into budget time with all our other fixed costs increasing. This is great news.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Diana. Anything that you would add to my thoughts there?
You know, not really so much, Ryan. It is just a great time to take advantage to mature that contract right now and still carry the decrease going forward. That's one of the beauties of self-funding is that when we add those years, when we run well and we can leverage those markets and a wide depth in the marketplace like we have, that really empowers us to be able to control cost as much as possible. So it's not a bad renewal this year, everyone.
Well, that's good news. Thank you for your guys' work on this.
Thank you. It's a privilege to work with you guys, and we're looking forward to being up there in person. Like I said, this was just one of those one-offs where I could not be in town, and we thought it the great nature of the renewal merited jumping on the phone call and having this meeting and making this decision and locking things down rather than staying on the risk clock, so to speak.
So Ryan, other than preliminary okay from us to lock that in, you'll come with kind of a hard final, are you thinking June, or when do you think we'll see you?
Gosh, I would say here in May. We just need to get it lined up. But this is, I will tell you, Commissioner, these numbers are hard and firm. As long as I can give them the yay in terms of yes, Johnson County would like to move forward with option four. That's really all I need to give them, and they can lock it probably by tomorrow with that. And then we'll just come up as a formality. Run through the numbers again, but I can tell you they won't change. Run through the numbers again, and then run through your plan performance reports as well.
I make the motion we move forward with option four.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much. We will reach out right now while on the road here. We'll reach out to Companion and firm that up. And then we'll work with Jackie and get a visit scheduled on the calendar.
We look forward to it. Thanks, Ryan and Diana. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you guys. Bye-bye.
All right. I do believe we have transacted all of the items that were on the agenda, plus the catering permit. Was there any additional business that needed to be transacted today? Again, a reminder, we will have Board of Health at 1 and Justice Center Joint Powers Board at 1:30. With that, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.